Hi. It's not easy. So, trauma stories are ugly. If I have one single word to describe, it's ugly. So, what do we do with that ugly story? Someone chose to talk, someone chose not to talk. As a psychiatrist or as a journalist, I was editor for 4 years of monthly magazine in Chicago, Bosnian American magazine, to help refugee 15 years ago. So I'm talking from both sides. What do you do with story, ugly story? I would say that I would highly respect individual choice of the person to choose what to do with it. And that I think that's the key. We talk a lot about concept about trauma and PTSD, but we talk about ourselves, we talk about science and scholars and researchers. We have to focus on people who survive trauma and give them the choice. I have a right to say this as a clinician. So when I teach in my hospital, I teach residents and students and colleagues. I told them, they asked me, do you really have to say a story? I tell them, first of all, this is not Jerry Springer. It's more than Jerry Springer. It's not funny. It's a give the people choice. I guess in Jerry Springer you agree to tell everything, but here, give them the choice. I was, after my experience, I had a difficult time initially to talk in details about trauma, but I did talk, and I was working in Chicago in a Kovler Center, a center for helping torture survivors, and I was working as a counselor and therapist and studying to get my license back. I was a physician for 10 years before coming to the U.S., and I came to the U.S. directly from concentration camps in 1994. But I met a doctor from Chicago who told me his both parents are Holocaust survivors. And he said, and his wife is a psychologist, he said that his parents never talked about what happened to them, to two sons, both physicians, never any single story. They said, we are survivors. That is how they dealt with that ugly story, and I did respect. But I told this friend doctor, telling the story is a complex. It's not simple, okay, sit down, have a coffee. That's what we do in Bosnia, a lot of coffee. And seriously, 15 a day. And I already had 5. So, so we had coffee and we talk. But he said his parents never talk. I said they didn't talk for a reason. There must be a reason. And it could be that I frequently talk about safety telling the story. It's about safety. Are you safe? Yeah, you may be fearless, and that's good. I think I was fearless, and that's why I ended up in concentration camp. I was against the war. So, but I told him there must be a safety place. And when people think about safety place, you think about place. It's not bombed or something. It's not about that. It's about relationship. It's about the relationship. So, and trust. And I said, okay, we'll have dinner sometime with your parents and they'll tell me a story. And he said, no way, and we bet, you know, for dinner. It was 10 people he lost. We sat next to each other and his father started talking to me immediately. And he did share his story. So it was about safe place and a trust to tell the story. We are talking, and this conference is interesting because they talk about journalism and psychiatry, so and telling the story. So I have many stories, and somebody said this morning that survival stories are disorganized, and they are for a reason. I can choose what to talk right now. I can tell you a joke, and I'm fine. If I go further in the story about Holocaust or genocide, it may not be good for me. So this is the key. That's why psychologists this morning said that stories are disorganized. They are disorganized for a reason, thankfully. So what happened to me is, I don't want to talk in details, but some I have to share. But the most I can tell you is that I was in the room, very small room. Like, I would say like this size, exactly like this size of the room for a couple months. And didn't go outside much or at all. And then food once a day, good diet. I lost 100 pounds. But when I talk here about that, it's difficult. When I talk to my friends there, it's jokes all the time. We remember like nice story about it, because it is about safety and trust. So that's the key. And advice from me, if I can give to journalists taking the story, this panel talks about it, it's just be a human person. It's all about relationship. I believe that one of the first steps in recovery is reestablish human relationship. Because torture and reestablish control. And that's what I was talking about, control, how much I'm going to tell the story. I was thinking to tell you a story about this room. Forget about it. I can't. So you imagine it was bad. And then, so it a process of healing and recovery is about reestablishing relationship and reestablishing your own control. How much control you have. Because during the torture, you didn't have any control. The purpose of the torture is, one of the purposes, is to take control from someone's life and control of integrity, identity, humanity. Okay. So, in my work with refugee, I'm seeing refugee from all the world. And I'm seeing people with PTSD, like police officer, or people who are just who are raped, or in Phoenix area once a week. That's what I do. It's I find out the most comfortable for me and my patients to develop a relationship with them. And I do not ask for the story. I do not. And I learned from my friend psychologist Dr. Nogal in Phoenix. And when she said the first time to me this, I was thinking, something is wrong with her. She said that she can do psychotherapy, good psychotherapy, with Afghani woman in the room without interpreter, and she doesn't speak Afghani, or Afghani person doesn't speak English. When she said that to me, I said, what's she talking about? But this woman lost every single meaningful relationship in her life. And now she is sitting with an American professional who is hugging her or crying with her. And that helps. Anyway, culture was mentioned several times this morning. The Afghani, specifically refugees, just for your knowledge, will not tell you about emotions. And they are depressed or anxious. They don't use that. They will tell they have pain in the shoulder, neck, or stomach. So somatization. So, and she was right. I saw later that she was right. Those women have been coming to her clinic. So the language, the question of language is only one part of processing what happened to you. Because there are different people who process with just the thinking, just thinking, or other way of processing. And at the same time, I have to tell somebody asked this morning about when are you going to, is the possibility of healing, possibility of recovery. It is. But it is not just telling story. Not just telling story. It's a complex way of healing. And I learned from an artist how do I know that someone recovered. When we talk in medicine as an MD, we frequently try to measure something. But this is not just measurable things. It is about, are you able, the recovery, is your ability to function or to think on this very similar or close way you did before the trauma. And why is this important for journalists? I was interviewed by a journalist, Michael McCauley, in Chicago. I did an interview with him for a month for a short piece that I read on NPR in 1995 or something, 1996 maybe, about my story. It was just about me in concentration camp. He was one of the best journalists that I ever talked to. If he asked me immediately about my concentration camp experience, I would not talk to him, probably. I was a very angry guy after 16 months in those camps. But we talked about my life prior to my trauma. And I respected it, and very carefully, that's what happened with me and Julia later writing the book, very carefully we have a story in pieces. That was my ability to say. I couldn't say story at once. I had a patient who said story at once. So we are all different. Please respect that individuality. Another point that I want to bring about journalism and trauma is there is a concept that I believe it's important. It's about when journalists, this apply more to refugees who are traumatized more than people from here. It's journalist is an American person for refugee. A refugee identify you to be at least some connection with government. So there is an illusion of rescue to that patient, and that could be damaged. It is extremely important to tell the story about the guy, Milosevic, who died in Hague, or Karadzic, who is now in Hague. It is extremely important. But how do you take the story, and how to avoid this illusion of rescue, it's extremely important. So I don't have much of advice and time to explain, but I guess talking to the person prior to interview, telling them this is the interview, what do you want to do with this, we're going to publish, are you agree, we cannot help you with, you know, we cannot buy you a car or something. So, yeah, that's the key. Some people expect it. That's illusion. So how, a few more points, how people deal with the ugliness of the story is so different, and me as a clinician now, I can see it, and I learn from my own experience. So one is a movie, K-Pax movie, that I really like a movie. I don't like some scene there, but there was a guy, if you saw, somebody saw the movie, probably it's about Kevin Spacey movie. He was found at an airport, and he doesn't know where he is. He said he's from K-Pax, basically. K-Pax is somewhere, cosmos. And the psychiatrist was trying to get him, where is that place? What's going on? But he got him on family. And we talked this morning about family disruption and the trauma, how trauma disrupts family. And he said, K-Pax, we don't have a family. We don't have a family on K-Pax. We just live alone. And then later was found that one day he came from work and his family was killed. So he chose that numbness, avoidance, illusion of that he is somebody else. He dissociates from his experience, whatever you call in psychiatry. He chose all of those to say, I'm not that guy that I came one day from work, I found wife and two kids killed. I'm not that guy. I'm from K-Pax. It is easier for him to say it. So for me, working with Julia, telling the story, one of the most important part was relationship and collaboration that I was able to partially edit the story and say, I don't want this, or I want this to expand or something, because I had that control that I lost completely when I was in care. Let me see if I... People also, it's mentioned this morning, but I have to repeat. We don't like horror story mostly. We don't like ugly stories. And avoidance is one of the third cluster of PTSD symptoms. You saw this morning. Avoidance is one of the symptoms. It's very strong symptoms, maybe the least to treat with psychotherapy. Is that people don't like it. I presented for 2 days in larger group than this to mental health professional in Tucson, Arizona last March. It was a teaching, helping them understand, teaching, treating trauma survivors, mostly refugees in Tucson area. It was myself and Dr. Mary Febri, director of Kavala Center in Chicago. Two of us, 2 days, same crowd. And first day, I had slides of some picture of me there with like, 100 pounds on me. And I talk more than today about my experience, what really happened to me. And first day we went to dinner and they said, we have an evaluation for first day. Should we open? I said, yeah, sure. Let's see what people think for tomorrow, And we open, and there was like seven to ten evaluation saying, yeah, it was good, But we would really like next time to bring a real survivor to talk about trauma and refugee. And I said, I have to say that tomorrow or something. I was joking more than today. And I said, I have to tell that. So the organizers, three women, they told me, please don't. And I did. I came next morning. I didn't like. It was a little subtle. I said, yeah, I'm this and this. I'm a refugee. I survived 10 camps. In the paper here is 6. I was in 6, but they moved me, so I count 10. So 10 camps. I was there for 16 months. That's me. I survived. I'm here. I'm happy to be here with you to talk about trauma experience, refugee experience. And I finished my talk. It was 3 hours with slides. And I sit across a social worker who is counselor, and she said, so you are from Bosnia? I said, yeah. And she said, so you came, you are so lucky, you came after war and straight from Bosnia to U.S.? I said, that's partially correct. From Vienna, Austria, in 1994 to New York was fairly straight. Before that, for like 3 years, was not that straight. And people around there laugh. I felt bad, but I had to tell him. And then later, I didn't feel later much bad for her, but I was thinking, what's going on? Is it her ignorance? No, it's not. It's probably difficult to hear stories. She was there on conference. It was payday for her or something. So, am I done? Okay, it was easy.